Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Tyke. We've all seen the videos of tiny kids playing violins so beautifully it belies their age. Often they're students who have been schooled in their instrument through what's known as the Suzuki method, which treats learning music like learning a language. One of this area's most successful Suzuki schools is marking its 20th anniversary this week with a homecoming concert by one of its most successful graduates. Heather Braun grew up in Wauwatosa and went through the Barcel Suzuki String Academy. She's now co-concert master and soloist with the Orchestra of Emmanuel Music in Boston. And before her concert tomorrow at Wisconsin Lutheran College, she's with us in the studio. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
This concert on Saturday is being billed as a homecoming concert for you, for obvious reasons. So I was hoping you might look back at how your connection with the violin developed for you as you grew up here. When did it start for you?
I started playing violin when I was 3 years old. I was trained in the Suzuki Pedagogy Program, which is the system where you start as a really young child, and it's the mother tongue method. So you learn how to play by ear just the same way you learn how to speak your language without learning how to read or write at first. It's the same kind of idea. My family was living in Arkansas at the time when I started the Suzuki program. I was three. I have two older sisters who also did the Suzuki program and a younger sister who did it. My parents were your typical Suzuki parent. They were completely involved 100% in our training. When I was eight, my dad became a professor at Wisconsin Lutheran College. He's a musicology professor there. And we moved up here, and they scoped for Suzuki teachers in the area, and their search led to Mrs. Fitzgerald, Celestine Fitzgerald, who teaches with the Barcel Academy. And I took lessons for her from the age of eight until I was about 16. And the Barcel Academy is celebrating their 20th year this year. And I was actually there when it first started. And I learned from Mrs. Fitzgerald and her daughter, Colleen, also while I was a member there. So it's been this. I went through all of the books. I went to Suzuki Institute. I'm here to help celebrate Barcel's achievements over the past 20 years. It's amazing. And also just to revisit. My family, obviously, is good to see because I don't get to Milwaukee very often.
Well, and you mentioned that your parents were typical Suzuki parents.
Yes.
And that is something that even if people understand the Suzuki philosophy, maybe they don't grasp about the parental and family involvement in Suzuki. Why is that such a big part of the equation?
Dr. Suzuki, when he created his system, he was really looking for something that would involve an entire community, something that would make a whole community really learn something beautiful. And his whole philosophy is to create beautiful people by teaching them music. And I think the parental involvement, the way I see it, is really key because when a child sees that their parents are also as involved as the child is supposed to be involved, then it just takes the learning to a whole new level. And it is really a family experience. I mean, for me, it was a complete family experience. My parents, when they first started as Suzuki parents, it's when my older sister was three. So this was 1976. And they were also taking violin lessons with her. I think that's the most rigid structure of Suzuki training. I don't think parents do that as much anymore. And by the time I was around, they weren't really doing that either. But it really, for my sister, it really showed that the parents, you know, they're doing the same thing. It's not just you should go practice. It's actually a whole involvement. Everyone is involved in creating this beautiful person, in creating beautiful music, in creating an atmosphere that really just creates beauty, I think.
Do you feel within that world were you predestined to be a violin player?
No, it really wasn't something that I knew that I wanted to do for 100% as a career until I was about 16 or 17 years old. And again, I have three sisters, and two of us are professional musicians, and two of us aren't. And the Suzuki philosophy, again, is not to create professional musicians. It's really to create a beautiful human, a beautiful soul, I think Dr. Suzuki calls it. It wasn't, and my parents were never like, this is what you're going to do as a career. They weren't stage parents in that way. They just saw it as something that we would always be able to use and have and say that we did. And it's a great thing. Nobody looks back and says, I wish I didn't know how to play the violin. And my sisters who don't still play professionally, they took lessons for 15 years, so they still are able to play at a very high level, and they're still able to enjoy it completely, even though they don't do it professionally. They still love it.
Do you remember coming to that realization when you were 16 that this, yeah. this might be more than just something you do?
Yeah, I was at the Boston University Tanglewood Institute, which is a summer program for high school students in Lenox, Massachusetts, which is where the Boston Symphony Orchestra's home is. And I had a teacher there who was just so inspiring. Her name's Bela Kies, and she's still a teacher at Boston University, which is where I got my doctorate. She was incredibly inspiring and just made me realize that this could be the life that I want. That it doesn't make very much money, but I'm really happy doing what I'm doing. I have a flexible schedule. I'm able to create what I love doing all the time, every day. And I love to teach. It's really nice to be able to give that to the next generation.
So. Well, and if I'm not mistaken, you are currently the co-concertmaster and a soloist for the Orchestra of Emmanuel Music,
yeah.
which is based in Boston. Tell us more about that group.
Emmanuel Music, it was founded in 1970 by Craig Smith. He was 23 years old at the time, and he just had a bunch of friends from New England Conservatory, and they said, why don't we do a Bach cantata? And a Bach cantata is it's a musical form where there's usually an opening chorus, so there's a lot of choir members, and then there are arias, so there's soloists in between, and then at the very end there's a chorale, one of the Lutheran chorales. There's over 300 of them, and Craig Smith decided, you know, why don't we just do this the way that Bach used to do it, which means bridging the sermon or right after the sermon in the church service. This started in 1970. It's still going on over 40 years later.
The orchestra has branched out from just Bach, right?
The orchestra has branched out from just Bach. So actually, we were at Tanglewood this past summer doing a piece by John Harbison, who's a very famous American composer. We did his grand opera, The Great Gatsby. It was a real Gatsby year. He wrote this opera in the 90s, but Emmanuel took it on the road, and we performed it at Tanglewood and also at Jordan Hall in Boston. It's a real community of musicians. The people that are there, we see each other every week, so it's not a typical freelance job where you just see each other when you're hired and you're just gone. You actually see the same people return week after week, so it becomes a real community environment. And I was also fortunate. I did my concerto debut with them in September. I was a soloist for Beethoven Triple, the violin soloist for Beethoven Triple, at the end of September, and that was a real treat, a real experience. It was really fascinating and very exciting for me.
And you mentioned freelancing. Mm-hmm. As we look at your biography, it seems to speak to a reality of being a classical musician today, and maybe always. I mean, you're also a member of the, if I'm saying it right, Arnais Quartets.
Arnais Quartet, yeah.
You perform with a chamber group in Vermont sometimes. Mm-hmm. You teach privately and through a public schools extension program. How do you balance all those roles?
My life is a pretty typical Bostonian musician life. I'm very lucky to live in Boston. They have a very thriving freelance scene. I'm part of the Boston Musicians Union, the American Federation of Musicians, and that provides a certain scale for us to get paid so that we can survive on a freelance salary. There's so many good musicians in Boston. So everyone usually has a teaching job at some point. The teaching is the regular, the steady, you know what's going to happen. You can, and then you schedule around that. So my typical week is in the mornings I have quartet rehearsal. In the afternoon I teach my students, and in the evening I have rehearsals for my freelancing job. It's busy, and I never really actually have a whole day off. There's always something going on every single day. But at the same time, what is nice is that it is my schedule, and I am able to have the flexibility to do all of the things that I do want to do. The quartet is something I've been doing for about 4 years, and if I wasn't a freelancer, I don't think we would have been able to do what we have done in the past 4 years. We've traveled to China. We went to Italy. We've done a lot of competitions. We've played a lot of concerts in California. It just kind of took off in a way that we didn't really expect, and it's been fantastic.
Is marketing yourself part of the equation as well?
Yeah.
I mean, you talk about your background, and it sounds a lot. You know, we do plenty of interviews with indie musicians,
right.
singer-songwriter types, and it sounds a lot like the classical version of that.
You do have to market yourself. And actually, I did my undergrad at Eastman, and I graduated in 2006. And I think they were just starting to present classes that people could take about how to market yourself, how to be an entrepreneur as a musician. This is something that is becoming more and more important. You can be your own agent, essentially. And that's kind of what the quartet has done, the quartet that I'm a member of. We do everything ourselves. We do all of our own marketing. We do all of our own PR, everything that we need to do in order to promote ourselves, to advertise. We are able to do now on our own because there are all these tools for us to do that. But it is something that musicians need to know how to do more and more. I never took that class at Eastman. I probably should have.
There is not a Suzuki school for marketing.
No, not as far as I know. I haven't learned about that yet.
You know, we've been hearing, and I'm sure you've heard this, that classical music is a dying genre. We've heard this for decades, maybe even centuries. Obviously, that hasn't happened. You were attracted to it. And there are obviously, since you're able to successfully teach, there are obviously younger people who are attracted to it. Do you see in your students the same kinds of things that attracted you to this world?
I do. One of the things that really immediately attracted it for me was orchestra. I was part of the Milwaukee Youth Symphony Orchestra while I was here for 8 years. And I kept going back to orchestra because I loved the feeling of playing with all of, you know, we're all creating this sound together. We're all working together to create the sound. And with my students now, I have a lot of students where I know that they wouldn't be taking lessons anymore if they didn't love orchestra so much, or chamber music, or playing with others. That, you know, playing with your friends, working on something, and the student, they're very smart. They can see the progress. They see day one how terrible it sounds, and it's just so hard. But then by the time they get to the concert, they're so happy. And that kind of euphoria of working on something that hard, I think that they really sense it and they really see it. And it becomes, I mean, I became addicted to that great, you know, I work really hard and then I get this product. And it just really became amazing. And for Suzuki, as a Suzuki kid, when I was part of the Barcel Academy, playing in group class gave me that same kind of feeling. You know, we rehearsed every Sunday night and we worked together, and there were only about 8 or 9 of us at the beginning. And, you know, but we became really good friends. And then playing music together just really cemented those, you know, such a great feeling of self-worth and that we're doing something special. And I don't think that people wanting to become classical musicians will ever go away, because it is such an amazing feeling. And the music that we prepare, it's the best. It's such amazing music to play and to perform. And, you know, freelance musicians, I recently read some letters that Haydn had written after he spent some time, you know, he was a pensioned, you know, he was a kept man at the estate at Esterhazy when he spent most of his life there. And he had a regular salary. He had, you know, what we consider a 9-to-5 job kind of idea, where he knew exactly where his next paycheck was coming from. And then after he was allowed to go, and he was in London, and in London, he was working as a freelancer. And he wrote this letter that, oh, the freelance life is, I get to make my own schedule, but I'm a little bit worried. I don't know where my next paycheck is coming from. So it's a balance. You have to see it as a balance for that. And as far as the classical music, you know, dying, I think that my generation is coming up with 100 new ways of advocating for classical music and advertising it in a very appealing way. One of the things my quartet does in Boston, we play for a group called Opus Affair, and there's a guy, Graham Wright, in Boston, has created, it's kind of a social scene where he rents out a space and people are allowed to enjoy a beverage, enjoy drink or food or whatever while they're listening to a classical music concert. It's not background music, but it's a much more relaxed atmosphere. It's attracting a lot of attention in the arts community in Boston, that he's, you know, bringing together all different ages of people, not only who are in the arts, but also who love to go to concerts.
It sounds entirely energizing.
It's very energizing, actually. It sounds great. Yeah.
Well, Heather Braun, thank you so much for sharing this world with us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Violinist Heather Braun grew up in Wauwatosa. She holds her Doctor of Musical Arts degree from Boston University and is co-concertmaster of the Orchestra of Emmanuel Music in Boston. She's back in Milwaukee to play a concert in honor of her other alma mater, Barcel Suzuki String Academy. You can hear her talk about the Saturday evening program in the supplemental audio section of wuwm.com/lakeeffect. That's where you can also hear the full piece that she's playing us out with, the first adagio movement of the Bach solo violin sonata in G minor. That is all for Friday's edition of Lake Effect. We're produced by Bonnie North, Stephanie Lecce, and Dan Harmon, with production assistance from Eleanor Peterson and Nathan Royster. I'm Mitch Tyke. Keep the umbrella handy. Looks like it'll be a wet weekend. Perfect for tuning in for Lake Effect Weekend tomorrow and Sunday afternoon at 3 on 89.7. WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio, NPR in Milwaukee. Stay tuned. Fresh air is next. It's 11 o'clock.